I ain't been to sleep in 3 days.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today we're doing another of the season recap podcasts. Today looking at my former favorite team, the Chicago Bulls, a team who was poor at times. They had a little Nikola Mirotic-inspired surge in the early parts of the season, and that waned, of course, as they played themselves out of a high lottery pick, but that is what it is. We'll talk about the fantasy prospects of these players or what happened to them last season, and a little bit about what we might think will happen with them as we move forward into their careers. Let's start by just having a look, I guess, at what's happening for this team. In terms of the upcoming NBA draft, they do have the 7th overall pick moving down one spot there, as the Sacramento Kings, who were slated to pick 7th, moved up into the 2nd spot. So the Bulls have pick 7. They also have pick 22 as a result of that Nikola Mirotic trade. They don't have any second round draft choices, as this front office gives them away like they don't think they matter at all. And yes, at times second round picks don't matter, but sometimes they do, and you just don't need to give them away as often as this Bulls front office does. But two picks in the top 22, you can obviously find someone really strong at pick 7. Won't necessarily be a good player. The Bulls did well there with Lauri Markkanen, and I was quite skeptical of that pick. I'm still skeptical of maybe his complete star upside, and I think that's the way we should be looking at this 7th pick for the Bulls as we move forward. There could be a chance that Michael Porter slips to them. It could be Mohamed Bamba who's there. Yeah, and I think both of those ones would be really interesting options for the Chicago Bulls. Absolutely zero positions should be off the table for this team. None of these teams should really be drafting for need at all, but the Bulls in particular, there is not one foundational piece, I don't believe. And maybe you could put Markkanen in that group, but that's probably about it. You just draft whoever the best player is at that spot. That takes us into looking at the free agency situation for the Bulls heading into the offseason. The biggest name here, of course, is Ryan Arcidiacono, who's a restricted free agent. Of course, I'm joking. He was a two-way contract player this season and didn't really show us anything. But the restricted free agent we want to talk about is, of course, Zachi LaVine, who came across as part of that Jimmy Butler trade from the Minnesota Timberwolves, coming back off that ACL injury. I don't think we're going to be seeing $20 million per year offers come in for LaVine. He did not play all that well in his time after returning from that ACL injury. He struggled at times, or lots of the time, in Minnesota. His defense is deplorable. I think the Bulls will be able to get him on a relatively cheap-ish type of deal, but they pretty much have to retain him after touting him as this crown jewel in the Butler trade. So he's going to be back with this team. I don't have much doubt about that. They do have a couple of other intriguing restricted free agents. Noah Vonleh, who they acquired at the trade deadline, was absolutely worth a flyer to get Vonleh in and see what he can do. And he showed moments there. He can be a strong rebounder. He can do some things defensively. He's willing to take shots. Doesn't necessarily mean they go in, but he's willing to spread it a little bit. I'm not sure of the hope of him ever becoming a consistent shooter, but he is really young for how much he's played in the NBA so far. So he's a restricted free agent. And the other guy is David Nwaba, who was really tenacious on this team, provided fantastic energy, great defense, super strong rebounder. Can't shoot for shit, but can finish at a high rate. And knowing your limitations, as I've said a lot of times in this podcast, is a really key part of being an NBA player. What can I do? What can't I do? Let's do the things I can do, and let's try to minimize the things that I can't do. Now, of course, being able to have very few things that you can't do is an ideal goal, but so many players are never going to get there. And Nwaba is a solid rotational piece, never going to develop into a star, but the Bulls should be looking to bring him back. In terms of our non-guaranteed deal, Paul Zipser has a non-guaranteed deal. He was putrid for the majority of this season. After some promising moments as a rookie, did deal with injury down the stretch, and I think the Bulls will bring him back. I'm not sure they're going to be enticing many people to come in free agency, but this front office, some of the words coming out of this front office in Chicago makes me think that they might be a little delusional about where they sit, talking about one-year rebuilds and aiming for, not exactly saying these words, but turning into a win now mentality after a one-year rebuild, which is just a load of shit. You don't have that on this team currently. So there could be some, I get the feeling that with one of the teams, as one of the teams with cap space this offseason, they could make some piss poor decisions, especially with, the inability to recognize where they actually are as a franchise and as a team. And I do have that concern. The other guy who is, non-guaranteed is the sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick, who realistically to me, he's not an NBA caliber rotation player. He can shoot. He can shoot the ball. It doesn't necessarily mean it goes in because he will take those shots. He doesn't do very much in any other areas, and he is not a rotation player on a good team, in my opinion. Not real good at moving the ball. Defense is a problem. Yeah, basketball decision-making, not necessarily his highest strength as well. We've also got Antonio Blakeney, who, again, like Sean Kilpatrick, takes a shit ton of shots. Volume shooting at its finest, but doesn't really offer too much else. He was a two-way guy. It'd be interesting to see whether they bring him back heading into the 2018-19 season. Last season, they were 27-55. This was a team who was the eighth seed the year before and fell off, predictably, without Butler around, no Rajon Rondo, no Dwayne Wade. So, dropped right down. They were 4 wins over their expected win-loss, which would have put them at a much better position in terms of getting that draft pick that would have helped out a lot more rather than getting the 7th pick for the second consecutive season. This is a team who was 9th in pace. That's an impressive number, but offensively 28th in offense, 24th in defense. Very little to really get excited about there, but they did take a lot of threes. 6th in the NBA in 3-point attempts, 11th in 3-point attempt rate, but unsurprisingly couldn't hit them at a high rate. Their 2-point percentage was the worst in the league. They hit the 28th most free throws in the entire NBA, which of course is pretty piss poor, and blocked the 30th most amount of shots. They were relatively okay in terms of taking care of the ball and not turning it over. They were strong there. They weren't a team that gave up a lot of free throws, so the foul rate was pretty good against opponents, but they gave up the most 3-point attempts per game in the entire NBA, and that's not an ideal thing. And they were helped a little bit teams not shooting excellently. They still shot 37%, but it could have been a lot worse given how many attempts they gave up. But that's in part the reason that they were so poor in terms of that overall defensive rating, 24th in the NBA in that metric, allowed teams to shoot very, very well against them as a general rule. In terms of leaders on this team in offensive and defensive rating, Nick Mirotić led the team in offensive rating. No one would be surprised there. But in terms of players who ended up on the team at the end of the year, Chris Felizio was the surprising leader, while Chrissy Dunn was the best in terms of individual defensive rating, and I don't think anyone should be stunned there. Worst offensive rating, Quincy Pondexter. No shock there. Many people probably wouldn't even know that he was on this team. While the worst defensive rating, I was a little bit surprised that it was Robin Lopez who was the worst in that category. And he did have a season where he struggled quite a bit. The leaders in the other advanced categories, you'll see Punchbob Shiploke leading quite a few of these. Portis led the team in PER at 19.7 win shares and win shares per 48, along with offensive box score plus minus, box score plus minus, and VORP. But those numbers where he was leading, they weren't very high. 0.3 for box score plus minus is a minuscule number to be leading a team. VORP of 1 is not that high. Win shares of 0.101 when the league average is 0.1 just shows you just how talented poor this team was. And while Portis led them and played well at times, still has many issues in terms of offensive black hole-ishness and absolutely disregard for defense, the fact that he was able to lead this team in many categories when he was literally just average, it does show how poor this team can be. Zach LaVine led the team in usage, unsurprising, almost 30%, while defensive box score plus minus was Omer Asik in his really limited minutes, of course. But apart from that, Chrissy Dunn, who, you know, showed quite a bit defensively, as he had done in his time in Minnesota the season before, really did show some decent stuff there. In fact, we'll get on to talking about Dunn straight away now, because he was the player who had led this team in overall fantasy per game value as the 52nd ranked player for the season. He was a guy that I was not high on as a player, and I've mentioned that numerous times in his time in Minnesota and in his time in Chicago, but I did stress fairly vigorously that when you're looking at drafting guys in the last round, second last round of drafts in fantasy drafts, you draft him because he was going to have that opportunity and he was going to have an ability to rack up assists to get some steals, but you had to be careful of your percentages. And he did that when he was on the court, played 29 minutes per game, 13 points, 4 rebounds. It's the 6 assists. It's the 2 steals. It's the half a block that pushed him to almost becoming a top 50 player. Almost getting to be like a guard version of Marquise Chris, perhaps. He's not as bad of a player, in my opinion, as Chris is, but a guy that will put up fantasy stats if he is on the court, but is he good enough to actually be on the court as his career progresses? He's already 24 years of age. He still shot fairly poorly, 43% from the field and 74% from the line with 32% from three. But that is a monster increase as opposed to last season where he was at 38% from the field, 29% from three and 61% from the line. And his true shooting bumped up 6 percentage points while his usage also jumped 10.5 percentage points. So taking your usage up from 14 to 25 is a huge bump, and then taking your true shooting up. Now, 49% true shooting is bad. It's really bad. 56, 57 is about league average. But it was a big, big increase there on the offensive end, and he took his per 36 scoring up from 7.9 to 16.5, in large part because of that bump in usage, but also the bump in efficiency. His steal rate also went up from last season, which I thought was impressive. 2.5 steals per 36. The assists were up. The rebounds were up. He hit more threes as well. And I don't think the Bulls are going to be selecting a point guard at pick 7. Maybe it's Trae Young in that spot. I don't really see it. So I think that Dunn, fully healthy, coming into the season where he can actually start the season and not ending it with a toe injury, which bookended his year with big chunks of missed time. I don't think that we're going to be in too much of an issue with him putting up numbers again next year. 29 minutes, that could easily go to 31 or 32, and you could see him at 15, 5, and 6.5 with over 2 steals per game, a 3 and maybe 0.7 blocks. And if he takes another leap in his percentages, which is a possibility, especially encouraging given the free throw percentage, then we're looking at a pretty comfortable top 50 guy for next season. I don't know how long that will last because I don't see him as an anchor, foundational type point guard, but he did prove me wrong this season with what he was able to do. Still had his issues, I thought, during the year. It wasn't put up decent numbers, but there's still some things that weren't necessarily great for him offensively, especially his advanced numbers don't shine him in the most positive light. They're still okay, but as a negative 2.9 and you're on off, that's pretty poor given the state of this team. The box score plus minus stuff not ideal either for Chris Dunn at a negative 0.1. But again, I think you'd have to count, especially from a fantasy point of view, his season as being successful. Let's talk about Lauri Markkanen now. And I spoke about him at length in part 2 of the 2017 NBA draft recap series that I was doing. He was the 7th pick in last year's draft, played almost 30 minutes per game, just turned 21, 15 and 7.5 with 2 threes. But the thing that does hold him back are the minuscule steal and block rates. 0.6 steals, 0.6 blocks per game, 43 from the field and 36 from three. He needs to turn that 43 into 49% from the field, and he needs to get 1 to 1.1 blocks per game. But I fear it's a little bit Ryan Anderson-y in that he's just not going to be able to get those block numbers up high enough. He rebounded a little bit better than I thought he would this season, and was able to put up some solid production. But I still think that his ascension to becoming a top 30 player in the NBA is limited. I don't think that he will get to that level. He can be a solid player who probably has a couple of 18-point per game, maybe 20-point per game years, but I don't see him being a fantasy stud given the lack of those defensive numbers and the inefficiency from the field, which I think in the end of it all will probably end up holding him back from being that elite-type fantasy guy. The next guy we talk about is Punchbob Shiploke, Bobby Portis, who was honestly probably going to be out of the rotation at the start of the season, caved in Nick Mirotic's face and found himself in the rotation and basically ran with it. It was ridiculous to me that he was only suspended as limited amount as he was this year, only the 6-game suspension to start the season, which I just don't, I clearly don't, didn't agree with at the time. Didn't start many games for the Bulls this season. In fact, if I have a look, he only started, I had it right in front of me there. Where was it? Only 4 games out of his 73 games this season. Portis, 23 minutes, 13 and 7. He hit a 3. He had 0.7 steals and 0.3 blocks. 47, 77, and 36 as his percentages, with a true shooting of 55%, and that made him the 129th ranked player for this season. And like Markkanen, the thing that's going to limit Portis is the fact that he gets you no defensive numbers. 0.3 blocks for a power forward, 0.7 steals, less than 2 assists. He got 13 and 7, and that's great, and per 36, 21 and 11 is really, really strong. But half a block per 36 minutes is absolutely atrocious. 2.7 assists is fairly poor as well. And all that's going to keep him, again, from really ascending. And he's really, I don't know what the right word is, allergy to playing solid defense is going to stop him, I think, from ever becoming a big minute starter. Now, he played well. An on-off of 7.9 is second on the team behind Nick Mirotić, who was 13.5, and Mirotić was clearly the superior player there before he was traded away. But Portis was good for this team. He provided lots of energy. And we've seen him have, you know, stretches before where he goes big and then disappears. It didn't happen as much this season. Still had a few weird performances. He had a 27-12, 12-10, 14-5 stretch in December, and then 6 points in 13 minutes the next game. Has those games where he disappears. He has those defensive shortcomings. And honestly, for as well as he can score on high usage, and he is a bloody high usage player, with a usage of 26%, second on the team behind LaVine, which I don't think ever should be sticking, and that won't be the case on any sort of good team. Just poor vision, poor ability to shoot, and a guy that can put up decent numbers, it's limited, and then I think his overall level of play will also probably limit him from ever becoming a solid fantasy guy. But he's still just only 22, just finished his third season in the NBA, so more growth could be coming, but we need to see better decisions from Portis. We need to see those decisions in terms of offensive, not jacking up contested shots with 18 seconds on the shot clock left, not ignoring easy passes, showing some ability to pay attention on defense. A lot of things that he does need to do to become a better player, but some encouraging numbers. And when he's on the court, in general, the numbers will come outside of the defensive stuff, but the numbers will come. Again, much like Chris Dunn, it's all going to come back to, can he be on the court for big minutes when the team starts to get better? And I have my concerns with that, actually, with that being the case. In terms of minutes, he played almost half of his minutes at center this season, and the Bulls still don't have a real answer there with Robin Lopez, but that could change in this draft. That could be Mo Bamba coming in there. They could run with more Markkanen at the five if they get a power forward. Maybe it's Michael Porter Jr. that comes in, and that could squish Portis's minutes. And the 23 that he played this season, I think that's a fair approximation of what we get from him as we move forward. Justin Holiday, just nonsense, I thought, from Fred Hoiberg, unless his directive was, let's try and lose as much as possible, which it possibly was. 29 years of age for Holiday, thrust into the starting lineup, played 72 games, 32 minutes, and averaged 12 points, and just jacked shots indiscriminately. Shot 37 from the field and 36 from three for a true shooting of 51, averaged 4 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 threes, and a steal. And there was a stretch through the start of the season where he was a very useful fantasy player. Didn't last, because the shots went, and early in the season, the shots were going in the start of the season, they're going in at a shithouse rate. And then he started to up that efficiency, but he was just bludgeoning it with high volume and getting those numbers. 15-4, 15-4, 25-4, 13-10. They're his first 4 games of the year on 16, 18, 17, and 11 shots. But when Mirotić came back, and when Zach LaVine came back, he did rein in the indiscriminate shot taking, and that did help him become a better player, but it also stopped his ability to put up those fantasy numbers that we saw and that was so good for the start of the year. But over the last half of the year, he wasn't an ownable guy and he finished as just the 130th ranked player for the season. He's 29 years of age already. LaVine will have a full season, assuming he is back. They have David Nwaba. There's Denzel the Hammer Valentine there as well to play on the wing. Maybe they get a wing. Maybe it's Mikal Bridges. Maybe it's Miles Bridges. Maybe they play Porter at the three with that draft pick. Maybe another free agent comes in. Holiday, to me, is not a long-term fit for this team. We saw that as they continued to sit him down the stretch of the season and then reintroduced him, of course, because it's the Bulls. Why not? he's not going to be this same guy. And judging it as early as we are here, I don't think we're going to be looking at him as a draftable, as a draftable fantasy player for next season. The minutes just won't be at that level. He had a negative offensive, defensive box score plus minus, a PER of 11, a piss poor true shooting, below average win shares, poor VORP. He just wasn't that good of a player, despite how some of the positive numbers looked. The on-off stuff was good for him, and I'll give him credit for that. He did some things. He did some defensive stuff with steals at times, but it was just too all over the place in terms of his shot selection, which does overall end up hampering what he's able to do. Now, a player who, of course, will be locked into the starting lineup next season, assuming that nothing goes wrong in the restricted free agency process, is Zachy LaVine, who returned from his ACL injury in January and then missed the last month of the season with knee tendonitis, which of course is a little bit of the worry. He had quite a few 20-point performances, a 21, a 23, 21, 27, 35, 23, 21, 21, 21, 21, lots of 21s, and a 20. That's a lot of 20-point performances in only 24 games, and averaged 16.7 points, 1.8 threes, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal. But of course, the shooting was horrendous. He was a 46% shooter last season in Minnesota. This season, 38%, 81 from the line and 34 from three for a true shooting of 49.9 on a usage of 30%. And that's not all with LaVine. His defense was absolutely atrocious returning from that ACL. Not that it was ever good in Minnesota, but this was next level horrible. And really, you should, as a Bulls fan, as a Bulls management group, you should be looking at this going, I don't know about this bloke. I don't think he can handle the number one load. I don't think, look, he had some moments in Minnesota as a spot up 3-point shooter, struggles still with his ball handling and decision making, and the defense, especially after the ACL, it's a mess. He this season, again, played decent minutes. He played 27 per game and didn't crack the top 130. I think we assume that that goes up to 34 per game next season. That's a fair assumption. Does the efficiency rise? I would guess yes. I don't think he's staying at 38% from the field. So that's giving him an extra probably four to five points per game just from the extra 5 minutes, plus probably an extra 4, maybe 5 percentage points on there. Does the usage stick at 30? Probably. Depends on, again, what happens in the draft and free agency, but probably. But still, I'm not convinced that he has really got top 50 written all over him, but he does have an opportunity to get that as a 20, 21 point per game scorer, 2, 2.5, 3s is a possibility, 4.5, 5 rebounds, much stronger rebounder this season as well, went from 3.3 to 5.2 rebounds per 36. And the assists, you get around 3, 3.5 assists with 1 to 1.2 steals. That could be touching the top 50. It's all going to come down to how that efficiency looks. Can he maintain that usage and bump up the efficiency, which we all should have question marks about? But there's no reason to say he couldn't make modest improvements. He was quite poor this season. The defense is going to be a concern. But again, this is not a team with playoff ideals, hopefully. So they're not going to be going, we just can't play LaVine because playoffs. They're going to be saying, well, we've just got to play him. We've got no other option. Antonio Blakeney's our other guy there. The sexy boy, Sean Kilpatrick. We just don't have other guys there who are better options than him, despite how many points he gives up going the other way. So he's going to get those minutes, and he's going to be able to put together pretty good numbers. Again, filing it into the Dunn, Portis mold of Marquise Chris, of maybe not very good NBA players or average NBA players who will be able to put up above average fantasy stats. And I think Zach could be in that consideration for next season. A guy who came into the NBA with pretty nice statistical translations was Denzel the Hammer Valentine. Struggled mightily in his first NBA season last year. 17 minutes, 5 points with 2.6 rebounds, but did improve this year. Took his playing time up to 27 per game, played 77 games, and was the 139th ranked player overall in largely a bench role. 10 points, 2 threes, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 0.8 steals on 42, 75, and 39. He was a 40% shooter at Michigan State from three, shot 35% in his rookie year, but again, took it to 39, more in line with what we're able to see. And this happens to a lot of the older type players who come into the draft, especially the high shooting guys, Buddrick Hield, Dougie McDirt, Denzel the Hammer's another one of those guys. You know, high percentage three-point shooters in their last year in college and then struggle that first year in the NBA. And then things tend to normalize in that second season. And that happened with Denzel. And that line, the per 36 line of 13-7-4 with over a steal per game is the sort of translational numbers I looked at him from Michigan State. So that can be an impactful guy. He still needs to be more efficient. True shooting of 53% is not high enough. He needs to be better, but another 2-3 percentage point improvement there is far from out of the realms of possibility. But if I'm going to hang shit on Zach LaVine's defense, I've got to do the same thing with the Hammer. He is piss poor on that end, although the defensive box score plus minus is nowhere near as bad as LaVine's. LaVine's a negative 2. The Hammer is negative 0.1 for an overall box score plus minus of 0.5. And in fact, Valentine was second on this team in VORP for the year and fourth in box score plus minus, which is a list that includes Nick Mirotić, who's no longer on the team. Windshare stuff was okay from Valentine as well. He was able to put up some decent enough performances and basically neutral on the on-off stuff. He was, I didn't think they utilized him great. He had some piss poor performances, no doubt about that, but way more double figure scoring games this year than what he had in the past, and highlighted by a strong run in March where he played a 39-minute game against the Cavs and had 34-7-6 with 8 triples and a 25-3 with 4 triples and 2 steals game against the Milwaukee Bucks in a stretch of 5 starts in a row. He also backed it up with an 18-3-3 against the Pistons, and that was indicative of the sort of thing that I thought he potentially could become on a bad team, but did have his moments. You know, we can look at a game against the Pelicans where he played 38 minutes and had 8 points. Still had 5 assists, 2 steals and a block. And I harp on it a lot that when players' value is based entirely on them shooting a lot of shots at high percentage, such as maybe a Justin Holiday, then you have little faith in those guys. But when a guy can have limited shot attempts, have a bad shooting night, but still contribute by getting you 6 rebounds and 4 assists and 2 steals and a block on the regular, which is what Valentine can do, it does raise the safety of what their floor can be. And then when the shot goes in or the usage goes up or whatever happens in that regard, then those other things come along with it. And that's what generally what we're looking for these guys who can contribute in these other areas on a consistent basis. And Valentine averaging 0.8 steals with 3 assists and 5 rebounds, it sort of qualifies for that. He's still a fair way off, but with, you know, the options on the wing, they're limited. He's still going to be, I think, in a sixth man-y type role, but he could start. He could exceed the 27 minutes per game he played this season. Take a little bit more of Justin Holiday's playing time. Develop into a secondary slash tertiary playmaker. I'd probably prefer him making the decisions than Zach LaVine. And half the time, probably more than Chris Dunn as well. But having those three together gives you multiple options to handle the ball. He just has to become more deadly with the shot. And you know, that may or may not come. He's 24 years of age, doesn't turn 25 until around Christmas. So while he is not young for a second-year player, I wouldn't say that he's necessarily exactly old. He still does have some room to grow. He's not completely out of it and does have some work to do clearly on his defense. But overall, an impressive step up from the Hammer after a disappointing rookie season. The next guy, you know that I love this bloke. It's Cameron Payne, who, again, had that foot fracture problem. And I say this a lot, but for anyone new to the show, Cameron Payne, after his first season in Oklahoma City, he won the Summer League MVP. Yes, it was the Orlando Summer League, so not as big as the Vegas one, but he won the MVP there, and he was destroying it. And then he broke his foot. And basically, he was shit ever since. He was terrible for Oklahoma City. I didn't like the way they handled him in Oklahoma City before that. He was playing really well as the backup to Russell Westbrook, and then inexplicably, Scott Brooks played Randy Foy in that role, and that was shit house. And then Campaign broke his foot. He was terrible for the Thunder. He got traded to the Bulls. He was terrible. He was terrible again in Summer League. And then after Summer League in 2017, he had to have another surgery on his foot, which kept him out all but 25 games of this year. He came in. He took the backup point guard role off Jaren Grant. He was starting for Chris Dunn when he was out with that toe injury and ended up the year as the 149th ranked player. That's a top 150 guy, which means 12 team value, 23 minutes per game, 9 points, 1.4 threes, 2.8 rebounds, 4.5 assists, a steal, half a block, 41-75-39 for a true shooting of 50%. These are numbers, and again, the shooting is not great there, but He was a 41% true shooting guy the year before, took his field goals from 33 up to 41, his three-pointers from 32 and 31 in his first two seasons up to 39. This was a guy who was able to rack up assists at a pretty strong level at Murray State, get steals and score at a high rate, and he translated that finely. The assist rate per 36 went up significantly. His steal rate went up. His scoring, similar. The threes, the rebounding, that went up, and the efficiency went up as well, and he made himself look like an NBA caliber backup player. Per 36, averaging 14, 4, and 7, with over 2 threes and 1.6 steals and 0.6 blocks, yeah, that's really, really good. Is he better than Chris Dunn? I won't say that, but if in 2 years' time he became better, I wouldn't be stunned at all. He's still only 23. He's younger than Dunn. I better double check that because I don't want to say that. I'm pretty sure he is. Yeah, he is. He's 4 months younger than Chris Dunn. Right, he's played one more season, but he's 4 months younger. So we look at him as being this veteran who shit and stinks and all this sort of stuff, but again, he's younger than the guy who we're looking at as the future of the point guard position for this team. And I think that people, even the most ardent campaign haters, would have to look at the end of the season and go, shit, you know what? This guy can actually stick in this league. Probably not as a big minute starter, but as a guy that can contribute. A 13 and 10 game in 32 minutes against the Cavs, a 17-point performance against the Pistons, a 15-3 and 6 with 2 steals game against the Nets. He had his moments this season, and he was far from disgraced. Defensively, still needs a lot of work, and he's well behind where Dunn is in that area. But offensively, I think he's probably a better player than Chris Dunn on the offensive end at this point. Overall, I'd give the slight nod to what Dunn can do, but I was impressed. A decent assist percentage. He took care of the ball at a really strong rate as well. The win shares numbers were pretty good for campaign. Also, a negative 0.7 on off. Really hard to be too down on what he was able to provide. A really high steal rate for a block rate for a point guard. Sorry, steal rate, not too bad. I thought that he was strong and definitely would have surprised a lot of people and hit his threes at a really good rate as well, especially his above the break threes, 39% on those ones. So I think that those of you in dynasty leagues should be looking at Payne as a guy that, could be another top 150 finish for him for next season. And again, if in 2 seasons he is a starting point guard in the NBA, I wouldn't be surprised. I'd be mildly surprised. And if he got 30 minutes per game, he's a top 100 guy. It's pretty straightforward because you'll get 7 assists, you'll get 1.7 steals, you'll get 2.5 threes, you'll get 16 points. But can he be good enough to get to that role? That's where the skepticism comes in with Payne. But I thought he did plenty this season and it was impressive to me anyway. Robin Lopez, not a good year from Lopez. 170th ranked player this season. He's just turned 30, 26 minutes per game, 12 points, 4.5 rebounds, 2 assists, 0.8 blocks on the 53-76 percentage split. Actually took a few threes this season, hit them at only 27%. True shooting of 55, very far down from what he's done the past couple of years. His time as a top 100 guy is cooked. He was 145th last year and obviously dropped down from that. The playing time dwindled, and I don't think we're going to be seeing Rob Lopez jump back up to being a 30-minute or even 29 or 28-minute per game center on this Chicago Bulls team. He's still under contract for them for, I think, one more season. The efficiency was okay, but realistically, he's more of a stream in for field goal percentage, perhaps a little bit of blocks, than a guy that you want to be looking to draft and think, yeah, this is the guy that I want to take with my final pick. He did drop a little bit defensively. His box score plus minus was fairly putrid at negative 1.9. That's not a good number. Winches not looking fantastic either. In terms of on offer at 1.8, it's not too bad. But I think at this point, at the age of 30 for Robin Lopez, we should be looking at him as getting close to being cooked, I would say. Jaren Grant started off the season and put up some okay numbers with Chrissy Dunn and Cameron Payne out. Ended up as the 217th ranked player, 23 minutes, 8.5 points, 2.5 rebounds, and 4.5 assists, 0.8 steals, 42, 75, 32%. He did have some strong runs. Late in the season, we saw it again with Dunn out, 11 and 7, 13 points, 15, 8 and 5 steals, 13 and 2. There's some okay numbers. And again, at the start of the year, 12, 6 and 10. 13, 4, and 5, 11, 4, and 7, like some okay numbers. But when we're looking at Jaren Grant, he is what he is, really. This is a guy that's a second string point guard at best, a guy who struggles with his shot for the majority of the time in his career, yet to have an above average true shooting season, not the best free throw shooter, doesn't get to the line. Defensively, he does some things, but nothing overly spectacular. A negative 1.8 defensive box score plus minus is pretty bad. Takes care of the ball, and that's one thing that will keep him in the NBA. Really low turnover percentage for a point guard, especially at 13.2%. That's the same turnover percentage that David Nwaba's got, and it's lower than Robin Lopez's. For a guy that was handling the ball as much as he was, yeah, that's obviously a positive for him. But with Payne showing some things, with Dunn in town, I think Grant's ability, and at the age of over 25, his ability to be a starting point guard is probably done in the NBA now. I don't really see that as being something that we can expect. He can occasionally have little stretches, but overall his value's fairly limited. David Nwaba came across, claimed from the Lakers off waivers, a restricted free agent who showed quite a bit this year. 8, 4.5, and 1.5. 0.8 steals, 48% and 66%. Now that's something I was talking about, how he takes the shots he knows he can hit. 48% from the field is obviously, you know, really strong for a guy who's a wing, but it doesn't, I don't know, he's not a guy that you want taking shots. And you go to clean the glass numbers and look at all the percentiles, and he's really low in all of them. Yeah, at the rim, 59%, mid-range, 29%. The thing that stands out is he's in the 98th percentile on hitting non-corner threes, 48%. That is going to fall. So there is a large element of flukiness in the shooting that Nwaba showed this year, especially his 35% from three, considering he was a 20% shooter in the 20 games in LA, and he is a definite non-shooter. Those finishing at the rim numbers did fall off a little bit this season, but again, a guy that many people in fantasy fell in love with this season. He wasn't a guy that was for me, ended up as the 255th ranked player. Just doesn't do enough. Like, he provides good defense, sure, but the steal rate's not that high. Rebounds really well, and that's a strong thing for him. Doesn't hit threes, doesn't score, doesn't get assists. The blocks are okay, the rebounds are okay, but I think from what we've seen from Nwaba, he is 25 already. Will he ever get an opportunity to play a bigger than 24 minute per game role that he played this season? Unlikely. I think maybe if it's going to happen, it's probably going to be on this team, but unlikely. And overall, I don't think it was, I don't think he's got, you know, massive chunks of upside or anything like that. Let's talk Noah Vonleh, who came across from the Blazers in a trade. He's still only 22 years of age, Vonleh. I'll talk about his overall numbers for the year. 16 minutes, 5.6 rebounds, half a three, half an assist, half a steal, and 0.3 blocks on 44, 62, and 30%. That's a drop in his true shooting from 53 down to 51, and his field goal percentage from 48 down to 44, which, of course, is not encouraging. The free throw percentage also not encouraging. But if we break it down a little bit further and look at what he did in his time in Chicago, he played 21 games and started four of them, 19 minutes, averaged 7 and 7, with 0.6 steals and 0.3 blocks, shot 50% from two-point range, 30% from three, 41% overall, and a disgustingly bad 48% from the free throw line. His advanced numbers, nothing overly great. Offensively, struggled a bit. He plays good defense, has really strong defensive rebounding numbers, especially really strong in grabbing those boards, and that's something that, of course, is a positive for Vonleh. In the 95th percentile of getting fouled and 88th percentile of grabbing those defensive rebounds. So there's some strong numbers coming there from cleaning the glass. He is a player who's a restricted free agent. That's going to be important to see where he lands. But the Bulls were 4.7 points better off per 100 possessions with him on the court this season, which is, I guess, is a little bit surprising that of how positive he was in that area, and actually averaged 13 rebounds per 36 after averaging 11 last season. Yeah, both strong numbers, and obviously was able to improve it. But he needs to be able to do something offensively, which he can't do at the moment. He needs to be able to hit some threes, or else he's just going to be like an Eddie Davis, a rebound stream type of player. And that's about it. Let's look at Chris Felizio, who the Bulls signed to a nonsense contract of 4 years, $32 million. I actually wasn't that critical of the contract at the time, but it looks absolutely horrible at this point. 18 minutes per game in 55 games, 6 and 4, limited steal and block numbers. Only 0.4 blocks per 36 minutes is atrocious. 59% shooting from the field, and he was the 336th ranked player this season. Clearly not a guy who was crushing it. This year, a PER of 12.5, negative box score plus minus, a real negative on the offensive end, a horrendous minus 13.4 in his overall on-off, which is clearly a piss poor number. And I just don't see this guy as being a solid contributor. He got some minutes down the end of the season and had some interesting games, but that's more through just I'm playing this guy because we want to lose. 10-10, 17-6, 16-5, 11-11, 14-11, some double doubles there, but does nothing in the steals and blocks. It's really low end double doubles on high field goal percentage and low attempts. I don't see anything from him really becoming any better at all. And I don't see him as being some sort of hidden asset or anything like that. The one guy I do want to talk about here to wrap this up is Antonio Blakeney, the two-way player. He played 19 games in the NBA before a wrist fracture kept him out for the remainder of the year. He was a guy that came in, he's a two-guard, and played obviously quite a bit for the Bulls before that injury kept him out. We'll have a look at his G League numbers as well. But for the Bulls, he played 16 minutes, averaged 8 points, 1.7 rebounds and assist, 0.4 steals, and shot 37, 77 and 28. Per 36, he averaged 17.5 points. That's great. 26% usage is not going to fly for a guy that's not good. Poor rebounding, poor assists, no steals, no defense, no efficiency. And while he looks good out there because people love the high volume shooter, man, Blakeney gets buckets. He does. He also gives them up, and he also takes a shit ton of shots to get there, at least in the limited time that we saw him out there. Absolutely horrendous advance numbers and negative win shares is bad. Negative 3 box score plus minus from offensive and defensive and almost negative 7 overall is really, really poor. A PER of 10. And while others were really encouraged by what they saw from Blakeney, personally, I wasn't that interested in what he was able to do. He did just turn 22, so there is some room for growth. But his G League numbers are spectacular. 32 points per game, 46% shooting, 35 from three, actually grabbed almost 7 rebounds and had 4 assists and had 1.2 steals. These are excellent numbers. Fantastic advance numbers. Win shares 0.162, box score plus minus 2.8, a PR of 24, a true shooting of 58. Things that look absolutely nothing like what he was doing in the NBA. And to me, that screams out as a player who's too good for the G League, but not good enough for the NBA. But first year in the NBA, only limited time, shit team, poor teammates, all that sort of stuff. He does have some ability to play, clearly. And if we can see that steal, assist, rebound, plus efficiency rate from the G League at least semi-translate to the NBA, he could be an interesting player. Because he's shown he can do it at a decently high level, but just showed absolutely nothing of that in his time in Chicago with the big team, and that is going to limit him overall. Just that really, you know, just no thought process, thought he was the best player on the court, clearly wasn't, made the poor decision majority of the time, but in the G League, he was the best player. So making those decisions was fine, and they went in, and he contributed in other areas. And he wasn't able to do that during his time in Chicago, but I'm willing to give him a chance to develop in that second year, rein in some of these crazy tendencies. Get the feeling he won't, but he is someone at least, you know, with more upside than a Powell Zipser, than a Chris Felizio, than a David Nwaba, than a Jaren Grant. There's way more upside in a guy like Blakeney than there is in those guys. Even like a Sean Kilpatrick, the sexy boy. Blakeney feels like perhaps a higher potential, better option than Kilpatrick. 6 years younger also helps, and I'd like to see Blakeney get that roster spot as opposed to the sexy boy next season, but we'll see how the Bulls management looks at that. But some okay promising signs, especially in that G League, but some troubling stuff from him in his time in the NBA, and that brings us to a close for the Chicago Bulls. You don't want me to talk about Omer Asik, because I'm not. That's it. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, you know the drill. YouTube, thumbs up, subscribe, comment, love it. Go ahead and do all that. Engage me on Twitter as much as you want. And check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, LockedOnSports.com, or on Twitter at LockedOnNBAnet. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. We'll be right back. Bobby Portis.